Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your one-day home of fantasy football. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by my colleague from North America, Jeff Rimbo. Jeff, how are you?
I'm outstanding, and you know, as we get closer to draft day, I'm getting better and better.
Yes, 16 days to the NFL draft. We'll have the first round live on Sky Sports. And Jeff, we'll both be there in Chicago for the big day. And for me, it's my first time. In all the years I've covered the NFL, it'll be my first time on site at an NFL draft.
Yeah, you know, Neil, it's interesting you were saying that, because I watched the NFL Network last night, and they had a little commercial for the draft and some scenes of last year and all the hoopla in Chicago. And I think the league's done a great job of really making it an event. And you could certainly tell by the excitement of, you know, of the players as their names were called and their families and the teams. It's really a unique thing in all of sport that you get an opportunity, you know, to improve your football team. You know, you think of it and put it in terms of the Premiership. Can you imagine being one of the teams that's, you know, fought off relegation, and now you have an opportunity to go get the best prospect out there? I mean, that's one of the great things about the way the NFL is structured.
Yeah, we as fans, we get to dream just for one night or for one weekend that our team is improved for 2016, even if it doesn't actually pan out that way when the season unfolds. That's what the draft is about. And for the young players, it's where their dreams come true. And Jeff, we're at that period where we're trying to work out who's interested in who, because we're seeing interviews with players, we're seeing visits being made, private workouts. But as you know, I did a fan night with Kirk Cousins last week, the Washington Redskins quarterback. He told me when he was drafted in 2012, if he had ranked the teams that were interested in him, he would have had Washington 32nd among the 32 teams. They made no contact, they showed no interest, yet they drafted him. We are in what they call lying season.
Yeah, and it is. It's the disinformation and all the, you know, cloak and dagger stuff that's going on around the league right now. You see teams bringing guys in, and they may bring a guy in, Neil, for a pre-draft workout or, you know, a visit, and do it just to send the smoke screen about what they want to do. And the other thing is, you got to understand, even to the moment that card goes up to the commissioner on draft day, one of the things we're going to watch is the incredible amount of phone conversation and phone play that goes on between clubs trying to move up, move down, go make sure that they get the guy that they want, maybe move down to get more picks. It is really, really an amazing, amazing strategical, it's almost like guys are playing high stakes Monopoly with these picks. It's an unbelievable thing.
Yeah, and the fun part is we really don't know how they're going to pan out. Tom Brady was a sixth round afterthought. Johnny Manziel was a first rounder who's no longer in the league. I mean, it's fun on the night, Jeff, but we have to wait and see how these guys pan out, don't we?
Yeah, you do. And, you know, it's interesting you talk about those guys, those first round picks, the ones that do and don't. And, you know, I go back to talking to June Jones about, you know, being in San Diego and Bobby Bethard making the decision to go with Ryan Leaf. And, you know, that decision, you know, may be one of the biggest mistakes ever made in the draft. You turn down a Hall of Famer and take a guy that is out of the league in less than 5 years. And, you know, really, I don't think ever, I can't remember one game where the kid played well, and it was just one of those deals. And watching David Carr on NFL Network and recognizing that there's the first player picked in the draft, and his career at Houston was a struggle, and he bounced around from team to team and never really became what everybody thought he could be.
Yeah, I remember the Colts interviewed Ryan Leaf, and they asked him, what will you do if we draft you? And they asked the same question to Peyton Manning, and Peyton said, I'll be in the building the next day studying for the 1998 season. Ryan Leaf answered, I'll go and celebrate with my friends in Vegas. I guess that told a tale of two quarterbacks right there. So we are going to look. Sorry, go on, Jeff.
No, I just think that's part of what I find so fascinating. Mm. As you look at these guys and, you know, you do all of the work and spend all of the money on them, And a guy can give you as clear a signal as that, and somehow, you know, you fall in love with them, and you miss things that are right there in your lap that are warning signs.
Absolutely. They certainly missed it with Ryan Leaf. The Browns missed it with Johnny Manziel as he money signed his way out a couple of years ago in that first round. So the draft is going to be on Sky Sports. We'll be out there in Chicago 16 days till the start of the NFL draft. So we're going to get a little bit of news done here. We're going to continue our state of the franchise. We're looking at Detroit, who picked 16th in round one, Atlanta and Indianapolis today, and we'll take your questions in the mailbag. Jeff, let's start with some news. Looks like Josh Gordon has failed another drug test. So it looks like he's had another positive test for marijuana. He did apply for reinstatement in February, but I'm going to lump Josh Gordon in with this frustrated, talented group of players. Justin Blackmon, Martavis Bryant. They can't get on the field because they can't overcome their addictions.
Yeah, just, you know, I mean, it's just really, it's beyond sad. You know, it's pathetic, really. And you know, one of the things about his positive test, Neil, that is the most disturbing to me is that along with the marijuana in his test was another solution that's designed to mask the marijuana. So it wasn't, it was a conscious decision that he made to go ahead and do this when he knew all that was at stake here.
It's I read a story, Jeff, originally as well, off of this story, but that Von Miller was living, had Johnny Manziel living with him, but now ESPN are reporting that Manziel's living with Josh Gordon. That's a recipe for disaster, them two shacked up together.
You know what, it's amazing, an amazing deal when you look at how guys throw their careers, throw their lives away, and all for, you know, all for chasing, you know, what? I don't know. You know, I guess it's a profile. It's, you know, being, it's you know, when you think about a guy like Josh Gordon, and then you think about a guy like Kelvin Beachum, or you think about a guy like Tyrann Mathieu, who after this senseless violence in New Orleans cost us Will Smith, stands up and really, really gets at the problem and really gets at, you know, and again, there's a young kid that's fought his way through. I mean, was you know, kicked out of LSU for smoking marijuana and but turned his life around. And you know, it can happen. And one of the things that's frustrating for me personally, Neil, is, you know, we spend so much time and energy on these guys, and clubs spend so much money on these guys, and they can't help themselves. And, you know, at some point, you know, it's time to move on, and I think that's probably where we are. I know the commissioner's going to rule on this thing, but I just can't see the guy playing football in the National Football League again.
No, and that's the frustrating part, because, you know, there was a period just before he got suspended where Justin Blackmon started to look like he got it. He was a man against boys. We know what Martavis Bryant can do from an athletic point of view, and Josh Gordon was the same way. But, you know, you can sort of look at all of those and say, well, okay, you say it a lot of times, Jeff, it's a privilege to play in the NFL. And I think there are players that see it as a privilege, and there are players that see it as their right. And the ones that see it as their right are the ones that get it wrong.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We had this conversation in our defensive staff meeting yesterday, and we were talking about a couple of players that had, you know, come up here from the NFL and brought their NFL habits with them. And, you know, guys that burnt through money. I'm talking now, we're not talking about a little money. We're talking about a lot of millions of dollars of money and did it in 2 years and were, you know, asking for advances on their paycheck because they had gone through that kind of money in two calendar years. I mean, it's incredible. It baffles your mind. It's just, you shake your head. And until somebody gets it and, you know, we attack this culture of excess or whatever you want to call it, you know, it's amazing, but, you know, there are so few voices of reason out there. And, you know, Herman Edwards is one of them that, you know, one of the first things he talks to his teams always about is you need one wife. You don't need a girlfriend. You need one car, one house, right? Yep. I mean, what do you need? It's about the need. But now that, you know, we live in this age where these young kids think that, you know, that it's a culture of, hey, look at me, a culture of bling, a culture of, you know, showing all. I mean, it's just so sad because it's only the players, it's only the individuals who get hurt.
Yeah, you mentioned Will Smith and the tragedy in New Orleans. 34 years old, father of three. He was a team captain on their Super Bowl team. He's a member of the Saints Hall of Fame, and he's gunned down and killed during what looked like a kind of road rage incident late Saturday night in New Orleans. And Jeff, I met Will Smith in the summer of 2008 at training camp, and he came across exactly what he was in that locker room, a leader of that team. You know, we don't know all of the details yet in this story, but you know, it's so just such a waste. It's just such a senseless, tragic waste. And you can see, you know, that story angered me when I saw it, and you can imagine why somebody like Tyrann Mathieu, who would be much closer to it, would be, you know, venting his spleen on Twitter, if you will.
Yeah, and again, I'm so proud of him for standing up and you know, saying the truth. And you know, again, it's and I don't want to get into, you know, big diatribe about, you know, our society, but you know, does it take losing a guy like Will Smith for us to wake up and realize that, you know, we just can't live this way? And this, you know, the gun violence in you know, America is ridiculous. It's absolutely, you know, I saw the murder statistics the other day, Neil, and you know, the big city, Chicago, unbelievable amounts of gunplay in Chicago. And, you know, just you shake your head and you go, when are we as a society going to wake up? How many Will Smiths do we have to lose? And, you know, Will Smith is a profile guy that we lose, but every day there's kids getting shot on the street. And then you just say, you know, when are the people that make the laws going to wake up and say we can't live this way?
Yeah, absolutely. It was just part of escalating violence in New Orleans at the moment. Let's move back to football then. And there were a couple of Twitter rows. Vontaze Burfict and D'Angelo Williams were going back and forth, keeping the whole Bengals-Steelers thing going. But, Jeff, this one interested me between Odell Beckham Jr. and Stephon Gilmore of the Buffalo Bills, because there's a football element in this that I wanted to talk to you about, because Gilmore talks about how he held Beckham to 5 catches on 38 yards last year when they played. And Gilmore says, come and see me when you can get off the press. Hashtag jammed up. Hashtag more punches than receptions. This goes back to what we were talking about, is that Odell Beckham is so dangerous once he gets off the line of scrimmage. But now we talked when we mentioned the whole Josh Norman thing last year. Defensive backs are going to A, try and get under his skin, and B, try and keep him at the line of scrimmage, because once he gets past there, it's potentially over. Is what Stephon Gilmore saying an indication in what is a copycat league that Odell Beckham's going to see a lot more press man, a lot more physicality, a lot more trying to get under his skin?
Well, I think that's what he set himself up for now, because of obviously the incident that everybody knows, the Carolina game where he and Josh Norman got after one another. But, you know, he's a receiver, first of all, Neil, that you never want to give free access to the second level, where you never want to allow him what we call free access, just a free run to up to the second level of recovery. So you're going to put people over the top of him, rotate a safety over him, and get your hands on him on the line of scrimmage and make him work for everything that he gets. Now, here's what I think needs to happen. If you're in the Giants, if you're sitting in the Giants offices and you see what's transpiring on Twitter, because they monitor all these guys' Twitter accounts, you got to call a kid in. You got to say, hey, listen, this is exactly what Josh Norman did to you. He baited you into a reaction, and if you don't gain the maturity to understand, you don't need to react to Stephon Gilmore's tweets, right? Because all you do is feed that perception amongst the defensive backs that you're a guy who, if you just yap at you a little bit, you're going to get you out of your game. Right now, he needs to be working on getting off press, not, you know, taking shots at Stephon Gilmore on Twitter.
Yeah, because it's not even a case of these things will get him ejected from games. I mean, he very well should have been ejected from that Carolina game. He ends up missing the following week against Minnesota because he's suspended. But it's going to get him out of his mindset, Jeff. So even if he's playing, he's not playing at his full potential. And even as a rookie, in a game against the Rams, I remember in St. Louis, he's fighting virtually the whole team on the Rams sideline. I mean, Once you do it a few times and you react to it a few times, there's a pattern there, and defensive backs are going to say, well, we can either get him ejected or we can just get him out of his natural game.
No, it's exactly right. They're going to find whatever it is that you don't like. For example, it may be something that you don't have. You don't have vertical speed. They're gonna glove you up and play you tight as all over the field. You can't get off of press. You're going to see it all day long. You know, whatever it is, defensively, you've got big ears. You got rabbit ears during a game, and you respond to vertical taunt. I mean, verbal taunts. Absolutely, you're going to get them and get them and get them again. Anything that they can do to get you off your game, they're going to do. And you have to recognize that. You have to have the maturity to understand what they are doing is exactly what you're allowing them to do and what you're promoting them to do, and that's get underneath your skin, because you show that you know, you're susceptible to that. And just like as if you have a technique flaw or a something in your game isn't up to par, well, they're going to attack that, and that's all part of the deal. See, that's the thing that these young players sometimes don't get. It's not just what you can and can't do physically, it's what you can and can't do emotionally. Mm. And if you show that you're weak, and that's really what it comes down to, you're weak emotionally, you respond, you react to a taunt, then you're going to get taunted all your whole career.
Jeff, I thought for a minute there you actually meant if you've got big ears. I was like, how would they tell you've got a helmet on?
Literally. It's that term you use, big ears or rabbit ears. Guys are so concerned about, they get so wrapped up in that whole, I don't know if macho thing is the right way to say it, but that whole, I'm a dominant player. I'm this, just play, man. Just play the game. You're a great player. Just play. You don't have to talk. Play.
Okay, let's dig into our state of the franchise this week then. Starting with the Detroit Lions, who pick 16th in round one of the NFL draft. So the Lions, well, they finished up 7-9, Jeff, but they started off 1-7, and they got to 1-7 with a horrible 45-10 loss at Wembley to the Kansas City Chiefs. Just before that game, offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi was fired. And then Martha Ford, team owner, got involved. She fired President Tom Lewin. She fired General Manager Martin Mayhew. And I think the team woke up because they went 6-2 in the second half of the season. And actually, one of those two losses was the Hail Mary game at home to the Green Bay Packers. So it was a tale of two halves, certainly, for the Lions.
Yeah, and when you look at this football team, and I've never been a big proponent, Neil, of firing people in the middle of the season. I just think that there's so much upheaval when you do that.
Yeah.
But in this case, it looks like it was the decision that they had to make, as much as it is difficult. And the Ford family has never been known as a ownership group that's quick with the trigger, but it must have been really, really tough in the building at that time, and so they made a decision, and it worked for them. And it's a talented football team. These guys are not bad.
No, I agree. Let's go through some of the numbers then. So offense ended up 20th in the NFL, dead last in rushing, but 9th in passing, with Matthew Stafford, he was benched in week 5 in place of Dan Orlovsky, but actually came back and was probably the team's MVP, had another 4,000-yard season. Defensively, they were 18th total. They were 19th against the run, 15th against the pass. So kind of middle of the pack there. They've lost some veteran players, though. So Stephen Tulloch was released at linebacker. They lose James Ihedebo. They don't lose Ihedebo. They lose Abdul Kudus. Of the secondary. They also they did lose Calvin Johnson, Jeff. I'm glad they kept Jim Caldwell, though, because I think this is a good head coach, and I'm glad he survived. I felt he was deserving of still being there.
Yeah, and Jim Caldwell's a steady guy. Mm. And I think that he's brought discipline to Detroit, because again, remember, this is a team that didn't lose games by being beaten. They lost games because they couldn't. I mean, they were a kind of the Cincinnati Bengalish, if you will, in how they, you know, couldn't control themselves. They got undisciplined penalties, you know, pre-snap penalties, all the things that bad football teams do because they're undisciplined. That had been their MO until Caldwell came in there, and it's changed. I watched them on tape, Neil, because I try and, you know, we've got every NFL game in all 22 here, and so I try and watch these teams before we talk about them. And I think the biggest thing to me with, as you look at Detroit, is they've got to find a way to run the ball. Mm-hmm. You've got to be able to run the football. And, you know, I watched them in three games last year during the course of the season, and, you know, they've tried everything from, you know, two tight ends, three tight ends, multiple formations. I mean, you know, big formations trying to run the football. They just don't run the ball well, and they don't stay with it when they, you know, when they try it. And until they can run the football better, I think it's going to be tough for them.
Yeah, I would start absolutely there, Jeff. And I think a lot of that goes up front. I think Stafford is under too much pressure. He was sacked 44 times last year. The offensive line is nothing. Nothing like a finished product. Riley Reiff at left tackle is serviceable, but that's about it. I mean, it's been a struggle. Amir Abdullah at running back had some fumbling issues early on, but I think he can be that sort of exciting back who you can build around. Joik Bell can handle the short yardage stuff, and Theo Riddick is a bit of an unsung revelation. He had 80 catches out of the backfield for this team, so they're, like you say, they're not without talent, but I think it's the foundations aren't there for them to, you know, fully exploit the passing game, and certainly it shows up when it comes to running the football, and I put it on the guys up front.
You know, and I look at this depth chart, and I see a name that I recognize at right tackle, Michael Ola. Michael played for us in 2012 in Montreal and was our sixth offensive lineman in Montreal in 2012, and he's bounced around from the Dolphins to the Bears to now to Detroit, and he's a great kid and a good football player, but particularly at tackle, that's not where Michael's strongest. And, you know, so again, you look at that and you say, you know, you've got a guy I'm going to tell you, watch Stafford play and you see why he was drafted in the first round. You
absolutely.
See why he, yeah, I mean, it's there.
Oh, absolutely.
You just, you know, you got to find a way to take some of the pressure off of him and keep him from having to win games. You watch the games I watched, by the time it was the third quarter, they had to throw every down. And when you get in that scenario in the National Football League with those great pass rushers on the other side and those defensive coordinators who can scheme you, it's tough. It's tough to win that way, being that one-dimensional.
Yeah, they have lost some leadership, though, Jeff. As I mentioned, Hedebo has actually gone as well. So you had add him, you had Tulloch, you've got Calvin Johnson. I mean, there's some of those veteran players there, because this is a team that Jim Caldwell's told me a few times, we're trying to build a team with high character. Well, those were all high character guys who are no longer on this roster. So someone else is going to have to step up and take that responsibility. And just going back to the offensive side of the ball, Calvin Johnson wasn't at his absolute best, but he's still an 80-plus catch guy with 1,200 yards last year. That has suddenly gone from this offense. Now you've got Marvin Jones coming in.
Yeah, Marvin Jones is going to have to step up big. Now, the question with Marvin Jones is, and he's shown progress over his career, you look at his catch numbers, how they've gone, the question that I have for is Marvin Jones a true number one? You know, and you know, you got Golden Tate, and I think the guy that I don't know if he's ever really gotten the opportunities that I think he deserves is Jeremy Curley, a guy that they signed in the offseason from the Jets.
Yep.
Now, I say that based upon what I saw on the field against him when he was at TCU. And I saw a kid that was small but extremely explosive and a great return guy, in addition to if you could get him out in space with the ball, he could create plays for you. And, you know, you look at his career – and, you know, he's got a long catch of 66, and, you know, he's been a 2-3 touchdown a year guy in an offense that, you know, really, that's didn't suit him in New York. And I'm hopeful for the kid that, you know, this he gives a little juice to that Lion offense.
My question with him, Jeff, would be, isn't he just another Golden Tate? But then that's not a bad thing, because New England are collecting Julian Edelman's up there.
Yeah, you know, you're right. And you know, you look at, here's the thing, you know, as we look forward to draft day, is you look at a team's needs, and, you know, it's tough right now to say that you could go to that group of receivers and find one that, you know, doesn't have some hole in him. You know, everybody says Laquon Treadwell's the number one receiver, and I think he probably is based upon his production at Ole Miss. But you're talking about a guy that runs 4.6. Now, you know, again, that's not, those aren't round one numbers, right, unless the guy is just so off the charts. But, you know, again, so you look at it and say, how's this football team going to get better? Well, they're going to get better if they can run the football better, and they're going to get better if they can, you know, again, get some balance in their football team.
Yeah, I think they get better, Jeff, if they upgrade with an offensive tackle in the draft. Maybe they look for another safety to go alongside Glover Quinn. I guess they get better as well if they get DeAndre Levy back, because he was out for all of last season, really, or, you know, most of it anyway. So if they can get that guy back to where he was the year before, then they're... I'm with you on this team, Jeff, because you look on defense. You've got Haloti Ngata, I still think, can play. You know, he's not at that dominant level, but Ziggy Ansah is definitely a threat coming off the edge. Darius Slay, I think, can be one of the better young cornerbacks in the NFL. I mean, both sides of this ball, Eric Ebron at tight end. I mean, you can go down the roster. Maybe it's just in those trenches where you really have to win, because they have headline-making players on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, and you know, there's a young kid. I know him because he's a Canadian kid and came through our combine, our draft, and then was eventually drafted by the Bills and played for the Bills for a few years and backed up, you know, at nose for the Bills. But I think he can be a plus for them. One of those, you know, kind of under the wire free agent signings that doesn't get a lot of publicity, but a kid named Stephon Charles, he's a good player and a good big player, and I think that that's positive because he can give the Lions a chance to rest Nada and, you know, in certain packages go in there and play two gigantic guys inside, because he's a big man. And, you know, when you look at him, and he was playing in Buffalo when, you know, when they would have situations where, whether it was by injury or suspension or whatever, they had to get him on the field. He played well. And, you know, I think the kid, you know, the kids in 14 had three sacks as a defensive tackle. I mean, that's, you know, those are the kind of things. He's not a guy that's going to go, oh, wow, you signed Stephon Charles. But I think he's a real positive addition. And I think that's the key thing, Neil. You know, we got these splash free agency signings,
yep.
You know, like Marvin Jones would be that for Detroit. But can you get these other guys in that are situational players, or, you know, maybe not, you know, high profile, you know, free agents that can come in and really give your team a boost? Because, you know, Nata's getting some age on him now. Mm. And you don't want him playing all those snaps if you can help it.
No, you don't. It's a tough division, Jeff. We know that Green Bay are always there or thereabouts. Minnesota have bounced back under Mike Zimmer. So, you know, you look at the playoffs and you're going to say, well, it's a tough ask for Detroit. But to me, they have that one thing that every team has to have. They have a quarterback capable of putting a team on his back. I think Matthew Stafford can be that guy. So they have to be a playoff contender for me.
I agree with you, and I think, again, this is a critical, critical draft for them. If they can improve that football team just a little bit and play the way they play, because, again, remember, you said 1-7, right? Well, I'm not a math guy, right? But you look at the back half of the season, they were a winning football team in the back half of the season. So now, can they carry that momentum forward into this year? If they can, and you get a few breaks along the way, and like you said, keep Stafford on his feet, keep him healthy, and you know, give him more of a balanced offense in front of him, and, you know, there's no reason they can't be a playoff team. They were 2 years ago.
They were.
You know, so it's not without the realm of possibility in Detroit.
No, and the Lions were a Hail Mary pass against Green Bay away from going 7-1 in the second half of the season. Let's move on to the Atlanta Falcons then. It was their first year under head coach Dan Quinn, new head coach. They opened up 5-0, but then they lost 8 of their last 11. They finished 8-8. They had a miserable November and December. They lost 6 games in a row. And during that streak, the scoring kind of dried up, Jeff. They were in a lot of close games. 4 of those games were decided by 11 points. And Matt Ryan, who had started off strong at the start of the season, not only didn't step up and make good plays for the Falcons in those situations, there were some times when he made some bad plays. I remember an interception out of his own end zone against Indianapolis, which was an absolute horror show. So there was some positives here, but it was disappointing. I guess the reverse of the Detroit Lions, Atlanta the other way. They started strong and finished poorly.
Yeah, and again, you know, everybody was, they were really the darlings of the league when they came out the gate as fast as they did. And then really it kind of, the wheels fell off of it. And I think that maybe that 5-0 start, Neil, maybe set them up a little bit because they weren't that good a football team. They just got some breaks early, they were playing, you know, free. They were, you know, playing probably better than teams anticipated. And this happens sometimes to football team. You get to 5-0 and you look around, oh my God, we're not supposed to be here, you know. And all of a sudden, it catches up to you. And I think it's interesting. I'm a kind of a Quinn fan. I like the guy. I've spent time with him, and I think he's a bright, enthusiastic, you know, guy. And I think he'll do well there. But, you know, again, this is not a team that is without holes, certainly.
They won some close ones early, which they then started to lose. So I think they were always involved in close games. They just managed to turn them their way early on. The offense was actually a top 10 offense. So they finished 7th overall in total yards, 19th in rushing yards, 6th in passing. They were 2nd on 3rd downs, actually. But on defense, very much middle of the pack. So 16th in total yards, 14th against the run, 18th against the pass. Jeff, I look at this team, again, I see a team that needed to protect, if we start with the offense, needed to protect Matt Ryan a little bit better. They got Alex Mack in free agency from the Cleveland Browns at center. That was their big worry, that pass rush right up the middle. Julio Jones was off the charts this year, by far the team's most valuable player. Outstanding production from Julio Jones. Roddy White was sent packing. I do think they've overpaid for Mohamed Sanu, but they had to find somebody else to go alongside Julio Jones, and I'm still think they're in the market for a tight end as well, because when they were at their best, it was Julio, Roddy White, and Tony Gonzalez.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you something right now, you know, they ain't going to find Tony Gonzalez because there's only one of that guy. But I agree with you 100%. They need some presence in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of thing that a really good tight end does, gets up in the seams, you know, eliminates their ability to play cover two and roll corners over the top of those receivers. You made an interesting point, Neil. You talk about they overpaid for Sanu. Well, I'm going to tell you something. When you go into free agency, you can guarantee you're going to overpay for everybody.
Right.
And it's just the nature of free agency. I think Sanu can give them that, you know, certainly upgraded second receiver. It's interesting watching them in the off season. They really are in the market for speed at wide receiver. And
yeah,
one of the guys they signed was my old guy, Aldrick Robinson.
Yes, I saw him, you know, buried on the depth chart at the moment. But
one of the things Aldrick can do is run.
Yeah.
I mean, that you know, there's some holes in his game, but I'll tell you what, the guy can run. And I think that's what they feel like they need, is they need some vertical, you know, some vertical threats. I agree with you on the tight end situation. I think the Alex Mack signing was key. Really key. But you know Dan Quinn very well too, and you know it's got to be just killing him to watch his team play defense.
Oh my goodness.
Because you know, he's a defensive guy all the way. But look again what some of the things they've done. You know, they had you know, again, Brooks Reeves, good player, linebacker, but that was about all they had. So what do? They go out and sign Sean Weatherspoon. They bring in Courtney Upshaw.
Yep.
They're making moves, right?
They are, yeah.
They're doing some things that make you believe that's what they're looking for. I still think they need pass rush help. I think, you know, you look at what they want to be. They want to be the Seahawks. You know, they want to be that team that has great speed and plays a simple scheme and just see ball, get ball. I mean, that's the kind of defense he wants to play. And, you know, I thought at linebacker, that's a step in the right direction. This is a defensive line heavy draft. Everybody's talking about that. They possibly as many as 10 defensive linemen could go, you know, in the first two rounds. Well, then obviously you know that they got depth at that position. The receiver group is very thin, so you go out and you have to overpay because you don't want to wait another year to get a receiver.
You're going to be smiling from ear to ear as all these defensive players get called in Chicago, aren't you, Jeff? We'll all be like,
you know what? I am really, really, I can't even describe to you how much I'm looking forward to doing the draft.
But isn't it?
Because I know you will be the most prepared guy there. I'm not talking. Yeah, I want you against Mike Mayock, one-on-one, calling it, because I know you'll beat him.
But it's, you know, I think just going back to the draft and then we'll get back onto the Falcons. You can't ever complain, it's a bit of a functional draft. You know, it could be, like you say, there could be 8 or 9 defensive linemen go in the first round. But you can't say, it's a functional draft and there's not that star names at quarter. Where's Robert Griffin III now? I mean, that was a star name and it didn't work out. I mean, you don't know from year to year. And as we've seen, those big guys in the trenches are every bit as important as a tight end who can get you 1,000 yards or a receiver who gets you 1,500 yards. I mean, it's just, you just don't know. Everything has its value, and everyone needs the big guys as well as the skill positions.
No question. And again, it's been proven over and over and over again. If you can't rush the passer, you're going to struggle in this league. Just like if you don't have a quarterback, you're going to struggle in this league. Well, look at the Falcons. They've got a quarterback. The guy can win games for you.
Yeah.
Now, can you protect him, right? Can you find guys on defense that can, you know, hold up their end of the bargain? And right now, that is the part of the Falcons football team that, frankly, is not holding up their end of the bargain. And like I say, you know the head coach is a defensive guy, and he's going to get better players in there. I look at and we'll talk more in depth about the draft as you go forward, but particularly the edge rushers, Neil, I just think there's a ton of really, really good players there that, you know, maybe don't have. I'm going to give you a name, right? Kamale Correa out of Boise State. Yeah. I really like that kid. And that's a guy that you could take to the Falcons, and he can go in there and he can give you edge pressure right now.
And there's the key to the draft, Jeff, which we should also point out to people, because we pay so much attention to the first round. There are 7 rounds. You could go and get a Shaq Lawson or a Noah Spence or somebody else in second, third round. However the draft falls, it's not all about that first round. You're building and adding to your roster over the course of 7 rounds. So if Atlanta decide, well, we want to go and get another offensive tackle, or we want to get a tight end, and we do that in round 1, they can still address other positions in the rest of this draft. It's not a 1-round thing. And just on defense, going back to the defense, Jeff, 19 sacks in 16 games last year. I mean, that's where it has to be better this year. Vic Beasley was playing with a shoulder injury. They like him. The reviews were positive, but he was banged up for his rookie year. I think he's going to be good, but you've got to go and find somebody else.
Yeah, you need depth. You got to have depth. You can't, when you're good, when you're really good, you're sending waves of guys at the quarterback, not just one guy,
right?
You know, not just one edge guy, because the reality of it is coaches are going to find ways to neutralize one guy. They're going to chip you with the back. They're going to put, I just watched the whole season of Denver's film doing an off-season project. And it's amazing how much two tight ends and all different kind of formations they see, because they're trying constantly to widen the edge for DeMarcus Ware and Miller. So there are ways that you can make it tougher on them. But when you've got good inside guys and good outside guys, and you can keep them fresh and you can play rotations, when Seattle's humming, that's what they do.
Yeah, those teams.
The over-tackle. He goes outside. Irvin comes to the line of scrimmage. I mean, they got the pieces. He's got to get the pieces now in Atlanta.
Yeah, those best defenses are the ones where you don't know where the pressure's coming from. Is it Von Miller? Is it DeMarcus Ware? Is it Derek Wolfe? Was it Malik Jackson in the Super Bowl? And speaking to Kirk Cousins, Jeff, he was saying last week that the defenses that give him the most problems, and he said it can be whether it's a 3-4 or it can be a 4-3, 3-4 hybrid, but he said when you don't know where the pressure's coming from, as you've kind of highlighted before when we've done our road shows around the country, as a quarterback, when you don't know where the pressure's coming from, that's the biggest problem. And Atlanta basically don't have enough of those horses in the race at the moment to create that uncertainty.
And again, this is where if you're a Falcon fan, you gotta say, we got a chance, right? Mm-hmm. Because you look at where the draft is heavy, and it's heavy in areas where you have a need, right? There are some tackles in this draft. Let's go back to offense. Yep. There are some offensive tackles in this draft. There's probably about five of them that have a chance to be there. I think there are two. There's one elite guy and another guy that's pretty close, and then there's some guys in there that are good enough to come in and start as rookies. And that's yep. a tough ask as you know to get an offensive tackle to start and play well as a rookie. But if you got a tackle need, there's guys there, right? And if you got a pass rush need, there's pass rushers there. So again, when you look at the draft, I think it's a draft that can be a draft where the Falcons can really improve their football team.
Yeah, and all three of the states of the franchise teams we're talking about this week, Jeff, will still feel they have their franchise quarterback in place. Matthew Stafford with Detroit, Matt Ryan with Atlanta, and in a few minutes we'll get on to Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis Colts. They'll feel like they've got their quarterback. One guy behind Matt Ryan, who really shone last year, didn't expect it from him. We thought it'd be Tevin Coleman, but it was Devontae Freeman who kind of took the running back job.
Yeah, he did, and played extremely well. And when you look at that, you say, there again is a piece. That's a core piece that, you know, we know is good enough to win with. And, you know, as you, again, look at the draft class and the running backs, there are guys that are going to be available. And this is really, really, you know, I can't ask for everything the first day.
Right.
But I'm going to tell you something. The first day of the draft is the hoopla day. But the real work, the real great drafts aren't the first round. It's rounds 3, 4, 5. Who can help their football team in those critical rounds? That's where you win the draft. Because your first rounder shouldn't be a big discussion, right? Because it's pretty evident who the top 32 players are. Now, once you start getting into when we get down in the number 60s and 70s and 90s, where can I find that guy that can come in and be a great player for us?
Tom Brady's. Those kind of guys, those late round draft picks, Cam Chancellor in Seattle, you know, Russell Wilson was a third rounder. I mean, Thomas Rawls wasn't even drafted, Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, you look at all of those kinds of guys, Michael Bennett. I mean, Michael Bennett's a free agent, he's not drafted. Those are guys, that's how you win the draft. Mm. That's how you win in the NFL. One of the reasons why New England trades down all the time is because they want more of those picks, because it increases your probability that you'll find two or three in the draft when you're drafting six of them as opposed to three of them.
It's interesting. When you have that approach, Jeff, you've got to make sure you hit on those as well, because Ozzie Newsome, it was interesting. We always, Ravens fans will say, in Ozzie we trust, and he's often been a trade down and accumulate picks, but he had a press conference last week and he openly said he's not done a good job the last few years with their draft, and it's probably affected their team.
You know, I thought that, and I tweeted this out, I thought that was awesome because here's a guy, you know, let's face it, the National Football League, pro football, whether it's CFL or NFL, is a CYA league, right? I mean, guys are constantly trying to cover that thing, right? And here's Ozzie steps up and says, it's not up to my standards, you know? And I gave him big kudos for that, for taking accountability. You want accountability in your locker room. You want accountability on your football team. Well, now it's showing through the organization when your general manager steps up and says, I'm accountable for this, and it's not up to our standards. And we're going to get it right. I love that.
Yeah,
I love that.
I did as well. Let's move on to our next team then, because they've got a general manager who needs to stand up and be accountable in Ryan Grigson. The Indianapolis Colts, they went 8-8 last year. They lost three in a row at the start of December and were out of the playoffs. They lost Andrew Luck after a Week 9 win in Denver. It was a lacerated kidney and a partially torn abdominal muscle. I know from talking to Andrew's people, we're very close to Andrew and to those people that look after it. It was a very, very serious injury, Jeff. It wasn't that, you know, at the time the Colts said we might be back in 2 to 5 weeks. This was a serious, serious injury. Lots of internal injuries there, which thankfully Andrew has worked his way back to full health. But, you know, it was a scary injury. And let's start with this, because I've seen this story today, which has come from Chuck Pagano, who says that Andrew Luck can't keep playing like a linebacker. So he needs to slide more. Jeff, I'm always siding on Andrew's side. You know that. So I'm going to ask you about this. But is the only problem here the fact that Andrew plays like a linebacker? Or is it time that Ryan Grigson and Chuck Pagano tackled this offensive line issue head on and protected the franchise player?
Oh, I think you hit it right on the head. I think you hit it right on the head. Why are we talking about whether he should slide or not? Now, obviously, you got to mitigate the danger to your body. That's, you know, I mean, that, come on. Now, we're all smart enough to know that. But what I want to know is, where in the heck have you helped yourself in the offensive line? I mean, you look at this roster of offensive linemen. And, you know, Costanzo, they think is good enough to play left tackle. I'm not sold on the guy.
Me either.
And you know, it's just a collection of guys. You've done all kinds of things to improve the football team in other areas, but yet still, in free agency, who did you bring in? Now, you can say, well, you know, we're cash-strapped or we're against the cap, but you find a way to improve. You have one of the not just good enough quarterbacks. You got one of the elite quarterbacks in the league, right?
Yep.
And you got a guy that really, you should almost be arrested for endangering another human's health with what you've done to him.
Well, Jeff, we talked about this
in terms of pass protection.
We talked about this before, and you know, it's one thing I was kind of harping on about for a long time. But I was saying eventually they're going to get this guy hurt. And that's exactly what happened, and the season fell apart. I mean, they had a few quick wins after that with Matt Hasselbeck at quarterback, but then the wheels kind of came off, including a 51-16 loss to Jacksonville. I mean, it was a, you know, it was a bit of a horror show once that happened. And then we thought for all the world that Grigson and Pagano might be gone, and there they are after the season, Black Monday, smiley press conference, and they're both back. And you know, I think they have wasted some draft picks. I mean, last year, their only draft pick of note was Henry Anderson, who was a defensive end, and he got injured in the end. But they spent the first rounder on Philip Dorsett when we didn't really think they needed another wide receiver. The year before, you got Jack Muhort, who plays right tackle at the moment. But I think, again, you would put anyone on that offensive line as a jury's still out kind of person. 2013 first pick was Bjorn Werner, who's no longer on the team. So, you know, Grigson has some explaining to do, I think, when it comes to this roster building.
Well, there was, I don't know, you guys probably never got the show over in the UK, but we used to have a show here called I Love Lucy. And Ricky Ricardo was Lucy's husband, and he was a Cuban band leader, right? And he thought, Lucy get in trouble, and he go, Lucy, you got some splaining to do. Well, Ryan Grigson got some splaining to do, because like you say, you take a first round draft choice, he better be the foundation of your football team going forward. Now, you look at it, they draft him number one, but they got to go out and they got to get Trent Cole to get any kind of pressure off the edge. Trent Cole is at the end of his career. And, you know, they're constantly tinkering and trying to fix a defense. When are you going to get it that you cannot get your quarterback hurt? Now, the thing that's concerning to me, if you're a Colts fan, and I am really, really maybe overly sensitive to this, but when I hear the owner talking about, you know, hiring Joe Philbin because he's a great teacher, and he gives the stamp of approval to guys on the offensive line because he thinks they're going to be significantly better. I really, really scares me when owners start talking about personnel in that detail.
Because the best owners, Jeff, they allow their football people to do the job. Robert Kraft likes to be kept apprised of what's going on in New England. He likes to know what's happening, but Bill Belichick makes the decisions there. I mean, this is, you know, Jimmy Haslam's been the other way in Cleveland, hasn't he? He's kind of meddled.
Yeah, I mean, go through them, Neil. Go through them. I mean, you ever hear Paul Allen talk about who the offensive line coach is in Seattle?
No.
I mean, they don't run the organizations that way. But when, you know, again, and I know that Irsay is the owner and he has the right to do whatever he wants to do because he's signing the checks. But, you know, it's just until they address it, it's going to be problematic. And if you keep getting him hit, you know, instead of, see, this is the thing I don't like about Chuck's comment. Instead of addressing why he has to play like a linebacker, running out of the pocket and you know, scrambling around, you put the onus on him. How about finding five guys that can freaking keep him on his feet?
Yeah, I think that we had similar comments last year from Pagano. Seemed actually quite critical. I've got a question from the mailbag, actually, Jeff, that I'm going to pull out now. It's from Michael Tonner, who says, is Andrew Luck struggling to live up to the hype surrounding him in the past few years? Sorry, I know he's your boy. I'm going to be sort of unapologetic. I still believe in him, Jeff. I just think, you know, there's some special throws he can make. I think he is one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL. I think he's this quarterback that you absolutely should be winning Super Bowls with. And if you don't, then it's on you as a general manager not to have put the talent around him. I think he still puts the ball on the money. And do you know what? They used to say Jim Kelly played like a linebacker, Jeff, and he didn't do too bad. So, you know, give him some protection. That's the priority. But I don't think Andrew would be happy with the mistakes he made. He's very down on himself when he throws interceptions. I think he actually tried to do too much at times. And so some of those interceptions came. But I still think we're looking at an upper echelon, one of the very best quarterbacks, and absolutely a quarterback who should be winning Super Bowls.
Well, he's got the opportunity, you know, to certainly get him there. And, you know, again, you just got to go back to the facts. And the facts are they're not good enough up front. And you look at their offseason moves. Sign Patrick Robinson. What's he play? Corner. Here we go. Yeah. Right? Then, yeah, you need depth at running back. And you bring in Todman. You bring in Turbin. You know, those are signings. Tolzien gives you a backup quarterback now. But other than you know, Dwayne Allen, what have you done, you know, getting him back? What, you lose Colby Fleener. Where are you improving your football team? You know, and again, the great organizations do it every way. And you look again, let's look at New England because they are the flagship team. You can say whatever you want, even if you're not, if you don't, you got to respect them even if you don't like them. And what do? They mix free agents with draft picks, right? They're not exclusive one way or the other. They do anything that they need to do to help their football team. And this is a team that is in need of offensive linemen, and they didn't sign one in free agency.
No, which then puts pressure on you in the draft, meaning you have to hit on them. You know, you have to make that, and that means that if you spend a high draft pick on an offensive tackle or an offensive lineman, then all of these good defensive line, you've then got to get one in the second round, because no doubt, Jeff, they need muscle on defense as well. You know, so again, this is a bit like you know, Detroit and Atlanta. Both these teams, you know, kind of in the trenches. They don't win in the trenches, and that's certainly the case for the Colts on the defensive side of the ball, not just on offense.
Yeah, it is, and you know, they've got some good young defensive linemen, not great, but good young defensive linemen. But your best defensive football player, you lost him in free agency. Jarrell Freeman goes to Chicago. And again, you know, that's not a positive sign, you know. And so you look at it and you say, okay, well, let's look at the draft again. And you look at free agency in the draft. You could improve yourself in free agency inside. There were enough guards. There were enough, you know, Alex Mack, you know, there were enough guys available where you could certainly upgrade from, you know, in the center guard area, which is a little bit weak in this draft. And there are some tackles, you know, like I said, there's five tackles. So drafting where you're drafting in the first or second, you should be able to get one of those tackles. You're not probably going to get Stanley, and you're not probably going to get, you know, the kid from Mississippi, but there's guys, you know, there's an offensive tackle at Indiana that's, you know, going to be a starter in the National Football League, right? And he's a home state kid. He's right there for you. But now you look at your football team and say, can you take him? Because you got all these other areas you got to improve. They got to get better inside, Neil, because I'm telling you, when you can beat guards and centers, you got a straight run to the quarterback. And, you know, again, I'm not a math guy, and I'm certainly not a geometry guy, But I was always told that the, you know, the shortest distance some places is a straight line. And if the quarterback's behind the center, then you better be good at center.
Yeah, let me just give you the numbers. I didn't give them at the start. So offense was 28th in total yards, 29th rushing, 22nd passing. Defense was 26th overall, 25th against the run, 24th against the pass. So the problems are clear to be seen there across the board. We've talked about the roster quite in depth. One guy we haven't mentioned, Jeff, who had about 900 yards last year, was Frank Gore at the age of 32. So, yeah, they did try this one-year experiment with Andre Johnson at wide receiver. It didn't work, so they're going Moncrief, T.Y. Hilton, and hopefully Philip Dorsett improves on the 18 catches he had as a rookie, which was, you know, poor return with him suffering some injuries. But it looks like they're going to go with Frank Gore again. Did Frank Gore show you enough, or do you think they draft a young running back as well?
Well, I like Frank Gore. I think he's a good guy in your locker room. I think he's a competitor. He's, you know, he's what you want. Now, again, like I said, you brought in a couple guys to back him up and give you some depth there and take some carries off of him. So I like that. I like them staying that way. But again, I know we're sounding like a broken record, but you got to keep coming back to you. If you want to run the football, you got to have some offensive linemen. You want to protect your quarterback, you better have some offensive linemen. You know, like I said, Allen's a good enough tight end. They've got T.Y. Hilton. They've got guys that have proven they can catch the football. And, you know, he's going to get the ball to him if he's standing on 2 feet. It's hard to throw to, you could have the greatest receivers in the world and you can't throw off your butt. You know, you just can't do it. I mean, when you're on your back, it's hard to complete passes.
Mm. Jeff, some breaking news today. Outside the window I'm looking at now, the sky is blue. And in other news, I was always going to defend Andrew Luck. Two of the least surprising pieces of news people were ever going to have noticed.
Well, I will tell you, no. Now, I've been to London, so to say the sky is blue, that's not exactly 100%er.
It's nice and sunny. It's nice and sunny here.
It's sunny here, too, but it's about 3 degrees.
Has the snow gone?
Nah, we're just getting rid of it right now.
Jeepers. All right, let's
Neil, we brought in 13 kickers last week to kick, right? And we go out to work out, and it snows. And I mean, it snows sideways. And those kids looked at me like, what?
I saw the picture of you lined up with the kickers. I don't know if it was just before the workout or just afterwards. And I actually wanted to go through the picture because you can tell by their faces. Doesn't want to kick in Canada. Doesn't want to kick
you
in can, Canada.
I'm just
does
want
you,
to. It was so funny because you looked at him like, we got some guys from down south, right? Then most of these guys go to Arizona or Florida to kick in the off season, right, so they can get the win. And they flew up here, and they were out there, and we had one guy. I felt so sorry. I sent him back in and told him to go see the equipment guy because he didn't have long pants on. I said, dude, you won't make it if you don't get back in there and get some sweat.
Jeff, how would I have done? Because I used to kick barefoot.
It would have been interesting. I'm going to tell you, the ball was about as hard as a rock because it was about two below when we were out there kicking in the morning, 9 o'clock session.
Excellent. Separate the men from the boys. Let's take some questions in the mailbag just to wrap up. Good one from Stephen Beach, who says, guys, which happens first? Raiders win the Super Bowl or London gets an NFL franchise? Well, Jeff, originally I would have said, I think we're maybe 4 years, 5 years from a London franchise now. So originally I'd have said London franchise all the way, but suddenly the Raiders have had a very good off-season. They signed, after we did our podcast last week as well, the Raiders signed Reggie Nelson, didn't they? We talked about a hole in the secondary. There they went and filled another need.
Well, I tell you what, I really truly believe that Mark Davis is downloading these podcasts because I remember you using that name and say Reggie Nelson's still out there when we were talking about the Raiders. And so unless you got a direct line to Reggie McKenzie and you're actually pulling the strings in Oakland and nobody knows it, I don't know, but you know, I think you need to be investigated.
Well, it's just, you know, I've already talked about the whole London Raiders thing, so I'm just getting in first, so yeah.
You can't know, man. I'm telling you, you can't know how many tweets I get from Raider Nation, and you know, because if you're a Dolphin apologist, I'm a Raider apologist, and it is so good to hear Raider Nation starting to get a little swagger back because it's been a long time.
And I did a couple of events last week for NFL UK with Kirk Cousins in town, and they've got lots of exciting plans going on. So I feel more than ever, Jeff, that the franchise is going to happen.
I do too, and you know what? And I watch, you know, I watch really, really close, and I, you know, when you see the packed house that you had, and the, you know, the electricity that was in that room, and just the incredible amount of dedication that the fans have in the UK, that's not lost on the National Football League. I'm gonna tell you that right now, and I really think that with each event that we do, and each year that the our numbers get bigger on this podcast, and numbers get bigger on on Sky Sports NFL, and all of those things are just pointing. You know, it's almost like it's becoming expressly clear that, you know, we're closing in on having one, and I think that's such an amazing, tremendous, tremendous thing.
Jeff, one more question from Craig Sutherland, who says, is there a sort of dark horse under the radar team who've quietly taken care of business during free agency? I'm just going to throw a couple of names. Obviously, we've talked about Jacksonville before, and I think what Jacksonville have done is very exciting. I think they're a team that can now take that next step. But Tennessee, Jeff, Tennessee Titans, that division, that whole division is going to be very, very interesting, because Tennessee, they re-signed Al Woods, who they needed on their defense. Then they go out and get Antoine Blake from Pittsburgh, Sean Spence, the linebacker from Pittsburgh. They get Rashad Johnson at safety from the Arizona Cardinals. Plus, they go and get DeMarco Murray to be their bell cow, which they want. They're probably going to upgrade their offensive line during the first round of the draft. I mean, I'm not predicting Tennessee to go to the playoffs, but I think they're going to be improved, and I think they've done quite a good job.
Well, I think, again, you know, you look at that football team, and I agree with you about the Jaguars. I think that they've done a smart job this offseason. And remember, they've got one coming back that we didn't see last year.
Yes, because Dante Fowler.
Exactly, and he, I think, can be that Irvin that, you know, that Seattle has, that can come give you that unbelievable speed off the edge. And so, again, I think the Jacksonville Jaguars absolutely, I think, have done the right things in free agency. Now, you talk about Tennessee, and here's the other one. Dick LeBeau will now have control of the defense. He was there in basically a consulting role last year, and now he's going to take it over. And what do you see? You see guys come in from Pittsburgh because they know what he wants. They know the system. They were born and bred in that system. And I think that's a positive. And now what they've done, Neil, I really, really think what they've done, which is so good, was position themselves where they can take Tunsil, and now you've got a what should be, if he plays to his physical ability, a multiple Pro Bowl year Pro Bowl left tackle,
yep,
which is the key spot. And you've got the year before, you go out and get a guy that can be an outstanding quarterback in the National Football League in Mariota. Now you're starting to see, you're seeing that, to me, is I'm seeing a strategy being put in place.
Yeah, and right? Jeff, if you go back a year before that as well, they had Taylor Lewan in the first round of the draft, and they don't feel he's that left tackle, but he could absolutely be a right tackle. So if you go and get Tunsil, you've improved two positions on your offensive line because you just shift your left tackle over to right tackle.
I agree with that 100%. Here's the move I think is going to happen. I don't know. It may not even happen till draft day if it happens. But I really, really look, because again, now you know how this works. If you're Cleveland and you've got RG3 in the building and you're going to have time with him between now and the draft, right? Because new staffs get more time.
Yep.
You can make a decision. If you feel like he's your guy, right, now trade down and get multiple picks. The analytics guys, right, what do they want? They want production for low salaries.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you get that? Well, you get more picks. You trade down out of that second pick. So somebody who needs a quarterback, let's say.
San Francisco or the Rams?
Absolutely. You can dangle now the ability. You can say to them, we can guarantee that because Tunsil's going to go in the first, I really truly believe he'll be the first player picked, that Cleveland now is in, they control the draft now. Because for all of those teams that are desperate for a quarterback and see Carson Wentz as the guy, you can now guarantee that you can get Carson Wentz, and now Cleveland can go down and has multiple needs and can get, if they can get multiple, lower in the first, another second, another third, you got a real chance to help your football team.
That's the fascinating part of the draft, because Cleveland could be on the phone to San Francisco saying, well, Philadelphia are interested in moving up. You know, what do you want to do? You know, the Rams have given us a call, and that's all that horse trading that goes on, which we don't really hear about right at the start until we see a different, you know, a different team come step up to the podium, or the commissioner step up. And explain that another team's making the pick. But that's all part of the fun of it, isn't it, Jeff? And absolutely could happen, because Cleveland, you know, Cleveland are many players away from being good. My argument was, it would be to that, I still think they might be interested in a quarterback themselves. They are in dire need of a face of that franchise. But you're right, and they maybe they feel in the next couple of weeks they see enough from RG3, although most of it's conditioning work at the moment, isn't it? The on-field stuff doesn't start until after the draft.
Right, but I think, again, what you're going to find out about is the kid. You're going to get a real... there's enough tape of him throwing and doing those things, right? Is he... Which RG3 are you getting? Mm-hmm. Are you getting the guy that projects so well on his interviews, or the guy that supposedly in Washington wasn't liked by his teammates? Well, you'll find that out in this next... you know, in these weeks where they're in their workouts.
Yeah, we'll find out. It's 16 days and counting, my friend. Looking forward to it. The NFL draft first round will be on Sky Sports. Jeff, we're out of time for this week, but we'll be back again next week. What are you? You're not going out to play in the snow today? Not going to make the punters? Not going to make the punters work in the snow?
No, we're getting ready for our OTAs. We've got we've got OTAs next week, and then actually, the minute our last OTA ends, I jump in my suit, catch a plane, and meet you in Chicago for the first round of the draft that night.
Fantastic. Fresh from the practice field. But we will be back before then on Inside the Huddle next week to discuss more as we count down to the 2016 season and the NFL draft in Chicago. Until next week, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.